above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly and permanently ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday. Though we are all loath to admit it, there's two seasons going on right now, Christmas and election season. Every year, I complain about all these huge retailers pulling out all of the Christmas decorations before Halloween is even concluded. For some of them, Christmas Day isn't even finished yet, and Valentine's Day is already out of the dugout and standing in the on-deck circle. It's almost a criminal offense against Christmas. Now, while I really can't do anything about the oncoming storm of campaigning, I can, however, do this. How about a little Christmas music to start off the program?
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph, Randolph ain't too far behind. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa's gotta make it to town. Santa, make him hurry, tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph, 'cause I'm reeling like a merry-go-round. Said Santa to a boy child, what have you been longing for? All I want for Christmas is a rock and roll electric guitar. And then away went Rudolph, whizzing like a shooting star.
Like I said, while we can't do too much about the intrusion of politics into Christmas, we do have a lot of Christmas music to fight back all of the insidious attempts to infringe on Christmas territory by other holidays. As far as I know, there's only one new candidate that's announced that they're running for elective office. That would be Mr. Reed Reisner from Casper, who's running for John Barrasso's seat in the United States Senate. Last Saturday, he was in Buffalo for the Christmas parade, and I got to sit down with him for a few minutes to get an update on his campaign. The first time we spoke to Reed was back on August 23rd, right after he had announced that he was running for the Senate. That episode was simply called An Interview with Reed Reisner. Like I always tell you with all these political types, you should probably go back and review what they said before. Hold them accountable for what they've said. So anyway, here's my discussion with U.S. Senate candidate Reed Reisner. Joining me today on the program at the historic Occidental Hotel is Reed Reisner. Reed, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's been a while since we've had you on the program, so why don't you just take a couple minutes and tell my listeners or remind my listeners who you are.
My name is Reed Reisner. I'm running for United States Senate against John Barrasso here in Wyoming. This is week 15 of our campaign. We've been to all 23 counties across the state. We're coming back through each of them for a second round, and we're really starting to focus in here and get a team developed to get the election taken care of here in August 2024.
You've been traveling around the state, been to all 23 counties. What are the number one and number two issues that people talk to you about?
Two of the greatest concerns are energy production in Wyoming and our energy industry, and two, jobs, which go with energy, and then also the Ukraine war and what's happening in Gaza and Israel.
So this morning on the news, I was watching an interview with Stephen Moore, and he claimed that it would take about 6 months to get the country back in the same position that we were pre-pandemic 2019. Oil and gas development, energy. If you're elected to the U.S. Senate, what specifically are you going to do to
increase energy production, get things back on schedule?
In the state of Wyoming, we need to reduce regulations at the federal level. And John calls it responsible regulation, and it drives me nuts when he talks about this. It's responsible regulation, all while he's easing regulations for the Terra Nuclear and Bill Gates power plant down in Kemmerer. And I don't mind the power, the nuclear power option in Wyoming, but when we have just recently, a day or two ago, Black Butte Coal laid off a whole bunch of workers down in Sweetwater County. This is a big layoff. So we have a bunch of unemployment. So John's responsible regulation that he's advocating for is going to be responsible for up to 20,000 or more job losses in the state of Wyoming in order to build a nuclear facility in Kemmerer that's going to employ around 500 people total. And it's actually irresponsible regulation, I call it. We can have the nuclear option. We should look at hydrogen option. We should be a leader in nuclear technology, absolutely. We're really cutting our nose off despite our face here a little bit, shutting down the coal plants, both in Douglas with in Glenrock and over in Kemmerer, Dave Johnson Power Plant, and we're shutting them down before we even have a plant built. We have really great clean coal. We have really great. It's got the lowest levels of sulfur in all of the world. It's really great clean coal. We're coming up on winter, and a lot of cold houses or homes are going to be cold. Energy costs are going up 30% and 40% across the state. We're seeing. And we don't even have a nuclear facility built yet. All we do is have the permitting process that's been sped up by John's policy and John's votes, all while he has responsibly or irresponsibly regulated our coal and our gas industry right here in Wyoming. So we need to deregulate and start getting the permits from Washington into the hands of our coal miners, into the hands of our gas extraction companies, into the hands of our oil production companies in Wyoming, and really create an economic boom like we've never seen before here in this state. Also last week, really great news out of Sheridan County was Ramaco Resources and their discovery of the United States' largest mineral deposit. So we are sitting on tiny Saudi Arabia, potentially. I mean, this is billions and billions of dollars in energy resources right here in Wyoming. There's no need for us to lose 20, 30,000 jobs in this state to usher in Bill Gates, Pacific Corp, and George Soros's Terra Nuclear Power Plant. When you start looking at the special interests and where the money leads, it's a whole story of its own. People are suffering in this state, and they go hand in hand. The energy industry and the job losses, two of the biggest concerns for people across the state, are hand in hand. And there's no way we can sustain this, even if we want to retrain workers out of the oil industry to work at the nuclear facility or to grab another career. Some of these guys and gals are in their 50s or even their late 40s, and they're on that last leg into retirement, and to have to retrain them, what John is talking about in the studies he's showing is absolutely insane to me. It's a dangerous path we're marching towards, and some people may not actually be able to retire because of this, or they're going to have to leave the state altogether. And that's a really bad thing for Wyoming, I think.
All right, so let's talk about the Department of the Interior, because that's one of the places where Wyoming has the biggest problem with our extractive industries. I mean, they're denying coal permits, they're denying oil and gas permits. So what specific steps would you take to deal with the Bureau of Land Management? I mean, what would you do when you get there? Be specific.
Well, one, we have to appoint the right person for the job. So the Senate has a couple main functions, appointments and confirmations, and then they also deal with treaties, which we'll talk about soon, I'm certain. When we look at appointments and confirmations, we get people in the Department of Transportation. This is a great example. We have Mayor Pete that John voted for, Mayor Pete, to be head of Department of Transportation. Pothole Pete. And before that, it was Communist China, Elaine Chao, who is Mitch McConnell's wife. It is absolutely crazy to me that out of the Trump administration or the Biden administration, John voted for both of these people to be department heads and secretaries of the Department of Transportation. So this is just one thing that the United States Senate can control and make sure that we're appointing the right people to the job and the office that they hold. So when we look at the Department of Interior, the Senate needs to hold these people to task, and either they are going to, by law, they're required to have two quarterly land lease sales per quarter, or we can start impeachment proceedings, and that can actually start happening. We can hold these bureaucrats accountable for their actions. We don't have a champion in Wyoming for Wyoming right now, and it's really, really upsetting for me and a lot of people across this state that I talk to. There's a whole lot of people all over. We need a champion and someone who's going to fight for us. So we need, if we're going to be stuck with our current administration and the bureaucrats in these offices and Secretary Pete, then by gosh, we need to hold these secretaries and these bureaucrats accountable to the law and hold them to task. And I'm not just talking about going out onto the Senate floor and giving a fiery speech saying, we're going to hold you to task. I'm saying we need actionable steps being taken to replace them and make sure that we're getting quarterly land lease sales out. Not just, so President Biden has only had 3 total land lease sales since he's been president in his administration. But the United States Senate has not held these people accountable. And one thing that absolutely drives me nuts is when the Republicans or the Democrats, this is a party problem in Washington. This is a DC swamp problem, I call it. No one's responsible and no one's accountable for their actions in Washington, DC. It's always, well, the Democrats have done it again. Well, Joe Biden's done it again. Well, if we do that, it's not good for the Republican Party. My stance on this is, John's been there for 20 years now, and it's very frustrating that he's blaming the Democrats and he's blaming Joe Biden for problems that he has been a part of and helped create. So when I get to Washington, D.C., I'm going to, one, make sure we appoint the right people or they're not going to get my vote for that appointment in confirmation. And two, if the Democrats hold control of the Senate, which I hope they don't, but if they do, then we're going to hold these bureaucrats accountable to their actions and make sure that they're following the rule of the law. And I'm not just going to give a speech on the Senate floor. We're going to actually take actionable steps to hold them accountable and begin impeachment proceedings and work with the House on this and work with Harriet and really form a team and alliance across both houses in the legislative branch to do this. And I think we have to start doing this to get our country back.
The other big part of Wyoming's economy is small business owners. It's extractive industries and it's small business. Now, in Wyoming, it's actually pretty easy to start a small business. The problem is dealing with it after you start it. You know, the paperwork, filing the LLC, all that's a piece of cake. But keeping it going, finding employees, there's some big challenges there. When you get to other states, it's significantly harder. So what are some steps that you can take in the United States Senate to help ease the burden on people who want to start a small business, who already have a small business and are having a hard time making ends meet?
To start a small business is easy, and to be a business owner is the hardest thing you'll ever do.
Exactly right.
I can tell you, I own a business, and it is no walk in the park. Running for office actually might be easier every day. It's long days. It's hard days. Finding employees is hard. We have a problem in this state where we can't keep young people around, and we have a state that is aging, and we have this problem because we don't have good high-paying jobs, and we're unable to retain and keep young people in the state of Wyoming. A lot of young people leave, and then they end up coming back to raise their families because they find out other states may not be the best option to raise their family in, and we welcome them back with open arms, and we love having them here. But we need to create an economy in this state that will allow young people and allow people to be prosperous. In my town halls, I talk a lot about at one time in this country, we had single income families. We had someone who could stay at home and raise the kids and someone who was able, and this was across the country, and we had someone who was able to go out and work and they could earn enough money to raise a family, own a home, take their 2 or 3 weeks of vacation a year and live a pretty darn good life. And somewhere along the way, that got lost. And I have my own sneaking suspicions what happened, which in the 60s and 70s, when we look at how we went from away from the gold standards was one thing. We see inflation happening with huge omnibus bills for the past 20 years. So when we look at that and what happened, it's a really bad thing. So, and it's tied to the Green New Deal, a lot of this, and green technology. It's completely hurting our state and our economy, and it's hurting young people in the state from owning businesses that are able to stay afloat and be viable. And then it's also hurting them in the fact that they can't find enough people to employ because they actually open a coffee shop and they need 5 or 6 employees. And they don't have any real employee retention because they can't pay them enough in Wyoming to live. You cannot live on minimum wage in any state in the country and afford a 2-bedroom apartment. Minimum wage is not enough to do that. So we need to take care of inflation first and foremost. And the way to do that is to create an economic boom in this country, reduce the deficit, stop printing money, and start getting the dollar strength back, and we have got to start doing that in this country, and that will help with our employee problems and our employment problems, and also with our retention in the state of young people and getting those really great jobs.
We'll get back to the program in just a second, but first, an absolutely obnoxious profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. I'm sure I don't have to remind you of all of this, but it's Christmas time. I know you've probably been way too naughty to get any fun summertime toys this Christmas. But what you could do is strike a bargain with the missus and get a building to protect all of the fun summertime things that she's already bought you in previous years. You see, that way you could get them all out of the garage so she can park her car in there and you have a nice warm building for your boat and your four-wheeler and your motorcycle and your side-by-side and anything else she's bought you before. The two Christmas elves that you should talk to about this are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't really matter if you just need another garage or a barn, or maybe you need a giant roping arena or even a huge warehouse for your business. Nick and Jesse are the two guys you need to talk to. Give them a call. Their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. You'll receive a 50-year warranty on the foundation, which is something that you're not going to get from any of their competitors. One of the things they do is they set the whole thing on concrete pillars and then insert a steel I-beam inside to prevent water from getting down into the foundation and ruining your building. I'm telling you, my friends, you can't go wrong with these two Christmas enthusiasts. So again, give Nick and Jesse a call, 307-674-2532, or just go to their website at mortonbuildings.com. Another Christmas elf you may not be aware of is Scott at Gunrunner Auctions. If you've been extraordinarily good this year, you may be in the running for a new gun. Here's what you do. Drop a hint to your better half to go to gunrunnerauctions.com. They are one of the nation's leading online auction houses, and they've been in business for over 26 years. You're not going to find a better selection of firearms than at Gunrunner Auctions. They specialize in estate firearms. How it works is Scott, the owner, first travels to the estate and appraises the firearms for the heirs. He then takes them to his Cody auction facility, where he and his team research them, sometimes getting factory letters from the Cody Museum about each firearm's history. And then every month, beginning on the 7th, that's tomorrow, they post 500 fine firearms for sale. Winchesters, Colts, rare military weapons, odd calibers if you're one of those strange collectors. All of the auctions start at $20 and there's no reserve. So, if you think there's a possibility that a firearm may appear underneath the Christmas tree, make sure you drop a couple hints to your better half. Tell her to go to gunrunnerauctions.com. If you haven't got a Christmas tree up yet, first of all, what the heck is wrong with you? Second, might I suggest wearing a pair of Buffalo Wool Company socks when you do it? Last week, me and the lovely Christine went Christmas tree hunting, and I was only wearing a pair of tennis shoes and my Buffalo Wool Company socks, and I didn't get cold at all. Go to the website, thebuffalowoolco.com, and get you a pair. And to keep the other end of your body warm, go to newtrendhats.com and get you a hat to keep those ears of yours nice and toasty warm. They've got a wide selection of hats for both men and women, and you're sure to find one to your liking. Go to the website, newtrendhats.com. And now, back to the program. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little foreign policy.
Sure.
In our last interview, we discussed Ukraine a little bit. Well, now, since then, now we have a war between Israel and Hamas. So what are your feelings, just general feelings, about the war between Israel and Hamas? And then I have a couple follow-up questions.
Sure. We fund both sides of every war for the past 20 years since the Bush administration. This has been happening. And the money just flows to both sides. So with Hamas, we send Iran $6 billion, and Congress, who controls those purse strings, again, gives a fiery speech, but doesn't do anything to stop the money from going over there. 24 hours after the $6 billion arrived, boy, Hamas attacks. I don't believe 1 ounce of American blood should be spilt in Gaza, not one drop. I don't think our people should be over there fighting. I am so tired of the endless wars of America funding both sides of every single war. Israel is definitely a NATO ally and a true friend of America, and we can support them, but I don't believe right now we need to send our troops over there and have military action with them. Israel can do this on their own, and we can certainly support them in other ways, but I don't believe that we need to be supporting them with our guys in uniform and gals in uniform right now. When we look at Taiwan and what's happening with China, the same thing. I don't believe America needs to go fight those wars. We're funding both sides of the wars. We're borrowing money from China to send it to Israel. We're borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine and Russia. And then now we're going to go fight China, supposedly, if they attack Taiwan. It's nuts to think that what's actually happening is going on in the world, and we're starting World War III. It's actually scary, and we shouldn't be involved in this. The United States Senate is in a very, very unique position because they control treaties. And I've been saying this since the beginning of my campaign. The United States Senate could have peace in the region just by going to our NATO allies and cutting off all funding to all of our NATO allies unless there's peace in the region. And I believe the wars are funded with money, obviously, and money's a big motivator in the military complex. If someone wasn't profiting from it, that wouldn't exist. And without the money, the NATO allies would 100% get together and there would be peace in Ukraine. And I'll bet you anything there would be peace in Gaza if we just didn't have any money and there was nothing there to fight over. The military complex continues to be profitable. If we take the profit out of the military complex, we will end the wars. And President Trump did it. And we were peaceful, and he led with strength, and people didn't mess with us then. And I believe we can do it again, and we can have actual world peace. It was actual world peace is what we had at the time. We had very, very little conflict with American interests during President Trump's time.
But don't you think that Israel is kind of a special circumstance? I mean, in 1967, when the Six-Day War broke out, Richard Nixon famously said, "Send everything that will fly." Would you say that Israel is a special circumstance, that we should support them more than just throwing money at the problem?
I believe they have the capabilities to support themselves right now, and they do not need American soldiers Listen, the people that are going over to these wars are true clients of mine. This is 100% fact. They are clients of mine. They are my sister, who is now back from Afghanistan and Iraq and having her own problems with the VA. And they are my nephew's age. I 100% will not support American blood being spilt in foreign wars anymore. And this is actually becoming absurd. My entire adult life has been spent through war and recession. And when I look back through everything these past 20 years, there's only been one constant throughout all of the recession and all of the war. We've had four presidents. We've had four United States senators in this state. We've had four congresswomen in this state. And the only person who's been through all 20 years and been that constant is John Barrasso. And he is a ranking member on so many committees, and he has so much power and authority, but he wields it really in an anti-American way, I feel. It is not an American first agenda that he's pushing here. And for us to go over to, and it's been 20 years. So in 20 years, we've lost 2,600 lives in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's a little over 100 a year. This is insane to me. And I've known those people. And if we go over to Gaza and we start a war with Iran and Hamas and between Israel and supporting Israel, Israel gets our support. They're our NATO ally, sure. They're doing a really great job right now fighting the war themselves, and I think they can continue doing that, and they can take care of this problem, and we can send some money if they need it. We shouldn't be in Ukraine and sending them money, and they continue to talk about that. We look at the huge omnibus bills they're spending, and they're going to tie Ukraine money to Israel money, it looks like, here in January coming up.
Or they're going to try.
It's going to start out with some appropriation bills. They're going to pass a handful of those and then one big omnibus behind it to push it through that's going to have big aid packages. And John already voted for $40 billion of aid to Ukraine till the end of Joe Biden's term anyway. All I'm saying is I don't believe that American lives should be risked right now in that region until we fully understand the situation. We can still support them without loss of life. And I truly believe that. And I think they can take care of the situation on their own without our help right now. And I think we need to look at that before we just all of a sudden jump into these wars. We continue to do this. We did it in Iraq when they said there's weapons of mass destruction, then there were none. And we do it again just off of someone telling us something's going on. Let's find out why we're going to war before we just go to war. And the Congress really needs to get its stuff together. This, we don't have to act this fast in Congress. And gridlock in Congress is actually a good thing.
I agree with that.
That was actually originally how it was started. We have three branches of government, and the legislative branch is broken into two houses. And it really churns slow because both houses have to agree on something. And this is how we get good legislation passed. We get the Affordable Care Act passed because we just rush it through and no one reads the bill. And when we rush things through, we come out at the other end with a 20-year war that's endless and we're still over there, and the Affordable Care Act. So let's really think about what the heck was going on in this country and why we're doing this before we just do it. When we rush things through our Congress, we bail out all the banks. And it's interesting because I was just listening to a book about the Roman Empire and Nero and how he hollowed out all the money to build his own palaces. And it's very, very similar, I thought in my head, to what happened in the 2008 crisis that John voted for when he voted to bail out the banks. They hollowed out our dollar, and now we have a lead-filled dollar, very similar to the collapse of the Roman Empire here. And inflation has just been rampant, and it's time to really rein this in. It's really a shame that we've come to this. I really do believe so. And we're headed towards some really, really, really hard times. And it's going to take some really strong leadership to get us through and someone to really evaluate the situation before they just pull the trigger and to vote for more aid for Ukraine and to vote for more aid for Israel and to vote to go to Taiwan and to vote to go to war with all these people. This is crazy. And we need to really evaluate the situation because this is very serious stuff at this point.
Okay. So let's talk about the other type of American power. You just told me that you're not in favor of sending troops to wars that have, you know, questionable reasons while we're there. Well, the other type of American power is soft power. And usually it comes down to money, foreign aid.
Sure.
So what's the, well, two questions, I guess. What is an acceptable level of foreign aid? And I guess the second question is, where do you draw the line where a country gets some foreign aid and which ones don't?
Well, our NATO allies, we have a treaty with them, so we would follow the treaty and what the treaty says. And that's kind of the Senate's job to hold us. The Senate is in charge of treaties. And it's one thing that they do is they make and hold the treaties. So it would be very, very important to follow the treaty. So NATO needs to, each NATO member should be carrying their own weight. One, President Trump told Germany this. President Trump told our NATO allies that you need to start putting more money in because we're funding like 70% of NATO, even though there's all these other countries involved. So if we equal the playing field a little bit, that would be very helpful. And we hold people actually to task for the treaty. So who gets money is, I guess, who needs it in NATO and who the Congress then votes to send the funds to. The Congress is in control of the purse strings. We don't legislate from the Oval Office. And I don't know how many times I have to say this, and I don't know how many administrations I have to say this in. We don't executive order and legislate from the Oval Office. President Obama did it, President Trump did it, and President Biden's doing it, and I know George Bush did it. It is insane to me that one person from the Oval Office is legislating through executive orders and not one member of Congress is coming out with legislation to rein that in and say, you cannot legislate this way. We have a process. We have a system of checks and balances, and that needs to go through the House and the Senate and then be approved at the executive branch. It's going to take a while to get through these two legislative houses. Because we're going to have to go back and forth. The House originally represented the people's best interests and the Senate the states, and it really great legislation got churned through both of them maybe several times and went back and forth a few times, and that's where we see gridlock. We haven't had gridlock, and we haven't had this kind of debate and this kind of legislation come out of Congress in a very, very long time. Instead, we're getting things like bank bailouts. We bail out the regional banks again here. So
we're gonna, probably coming.
We get the Affordable Care Act. We get Ukraine aid. We get massive omnibus bills. No one actually wants to look at what the heck is going on with our spending and our $2.2 trillion as we head into 2024's deficit, which is just over 10% of our GDP. No one wants to look at that. No one wants to hold Janet Yellen accountable for her actions when she says we can get to $60 trillion in debt, which would put us at possibly 40% deficit to GDP. And John seems to think it's okay to just rubber stamp whatever Mitch McConnell tells him to do and pass these massive omnibus bills and usher in nuclear power because he wants to be the leader of nuclear power. Well, I don't disagree. We need to be a leader in these in the nuclear field and the nuclear power in this country. We need to take our resources back from Russia that Hillary Clinton sold. We have a lot of things we need to do, but we cannot rubber stamp everything Mitch McConnell wants to do because his excuse is, well, if we shut the government down, that's bad for the Republican Party. I don't care if it's good or bad for the Republican Party. I want what's best for the American people and the people of Wyoming. And I really think if it comes down to balancing the budget and we have to shut the government down, then let's shut it down, balance the budget. And I tell people that the sunshine on our shoulders in a month's time of work will be much warmer and feel so much better coming out with a balanced budget than it will just kicking the can down the road like we're getting ready to do again in January for another 6 months until we get into May and June again where we're going to pass another omnibus bill and talk about another government shutdown. So
okay, so
it's
so
insane.
Let me just stop you right there.
Yeah.
Obviously, I agree with you that balancing the budget would be a good thing. How do we go about doing that?
We passed Senate Bill 89, which originally John co-sponsored. So originally John co-sponsored Senate Bill 89. He took his name off of it, and he co-sponsored what they call dollar-for-dollar budgeting with Cynthia Lummis. And I can't understand why he did that. I signed a pledge to vote for Senate Bill 89, and it's two sentences. It's the best piece of legislation they've created in a very long time. It is Senate Bill 89, no budget, no pay act. Either both the House and the Senate pass and approve a budget, a balanced budget, or no member of Congress shall get paid. So that's how we balance the budget. And it starts right there, and it would be so simple for them to do. And every American would vote for it because it would be a constitutional amendment, and I can't imagine why two-thirds of the states wouldn't vote for that. So it starts there, and then it starts with people who don't have special interests and lobbyists giving them millions of dollars to do what they're told and spend money in certain areas. So reining in how we fund our elections and how we're campaign finance reform would be very, very important to me. I am not a politician, and I've been doing this for 15 weeks, and I have learned a lot about how campaign finance works. It's actually quite scary how individuals contribute versus how super PACs and PACs contribute and businesses contribute. And you learn a lot, and you learn a lot about where the money's coming from and how it's getting there and why it's getting there. I'm in a competition against John. So when I look at John's finances, it's quite a telling story. It's almost a book and novel of its own. I don't know that that's in Wyoming's best interest. Only $150,000 of his $7 or $8 million that he currently has came from the state of Wyoming. I think I'll be at $110,000 at the end of this quarter or more here. So we'll be right around there already, and I'm 15 weeks into this. So I'm already outpacing him with in-state funding. The rest of it's coming from, he's got financiers like BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street. That's scary. I'm in the finance industry, and I probably wouldn't accept their money if they offered it to me. I wouldn't want to be tied to them. A lot of it's coming from Israeli oil PACs. And when we look at what's going on with Israel right now and Gaza and what's happening in the energy industry and where we're importing and exporting from, the money tells its own story in politics, and I've learned so much these past 15 weeks that I never, ever realized.
Probably didn't want to know.
And I truly encourage everyone in the state of Wyoming and everyone in America, really, to go look up John's finances. You can look my finances up. It's all right there. It's all reported, and there will be another report here January 15th, I think, sometime. There will be another report. It shows exactly who contributed, Bill Gates. It shows everyone who contributed right there on his finances and who's paying him to do what he does and to vote how he votes, and it's quite a scary thing. So campaign finance reform, Senate Bill 89 is the start of a balanced budget, and we start there, and we start truly electing people who are willing to work for the American people and have the American people's best interests in mind and at heart, and go to Washington to do their job, which is to run a business. The government is a big business, and run it effectively, and running it at a $2.2 trillion deficit is not an efficient business.
I don't think so.
And running it at $34 or $35 trillion in debt is not a great business. And that's trillion with a T. So we need to reduce our debt, reduce our deficit, and start increasing our income somehow through energy independence in America. And that starts in Wyoming. I truly believe that starts in Wyoming. We're sitting on the United States' largest mineral reserve right up in Sheridan County. And that's a fascinating brand new discovery that just came out last week. So it's really, really important. So that's where balancing the budget starts, is electing people willing to go to Washington and work and do it.
Well, Reed, I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me. If people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Yep. You go to reedraisner.com. That's R-E-I-D-R-A-S-N-E-R.com. Or you can hit me up on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and my TikTok is about to get shut down, I think, because I've gotten a community violation. So I think I got my last warning and it's about gone, but you can hit me up anywhere else. Send me a message. I try to respond to everyone as timely as I can. I do miss some messages, but I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Thanks again, Reed.
Thank you.
That'll do it for today's installment of the program. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk again tomorrow when I have the replay of the live episode that we do every week. Don't forget to subscribe and follow the program. That way you can be notified of any new episodes of Cowboy State Politics. And also, remember my live program, which is every weekday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 on the Independence Network. You can listen to it by going to independencenetwork.us. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.